Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this evening's edition of the Global Math Department. My name is Lee Natero, and I'll be your host tonight. Tonight, we're going to be hearing from Shannon Keebler about fostering the Equitable Math Talk community. Would everyone please introduce themselves in the chat window, telling us what you teach, where you teach, and what your Twitter handle is, if you have one. Welcome, Lauren. Welcome, Kimberly. Welcome, Virginia. I know we have 30 people here tonight. Feel free to chime in with what you teach, where you teach, and what your Twitter handle is if you have one. Before I introduce our speaker and turn the presentation over to her, let me explain a little about how these meetings work. These meetings are recorded and are available a few hours after the meeting ends. To view the recording, you would come back to the same URL you used to get here tonight. The Global Math community prides itself on being friendly and supportive. The chat room is available for topical and general conversation throughout the meeting. I'll catch your questions for the presenter, so don't worry that she won't notice it in the chatter. Our speaker tonight is Shannon Keebler. Shannon is an independent K-6 math coach and consultant with a mission to create and foster equitable mathematics instruction for all students. She's a former elementary teacher, math interventionist, mathematics coach, and former professional development writer, developer, consultant for a large and a small publisher. So tonight, I'd like us to welcome Shannon Keebler.
Thanks, Lee. I'm so glad that there's so many people that have popped on here. We're going to have a good hour just walking through some really simple and transformative ideas. And so I'm going to start here by making sure you see my Twitter handle as well. So feel free to tweet out any screenshots of this evening's webinar at S.E. Keebler, and that's on my screen here. I do a lot of work with the specific math curriculum, math expression. So if that happens to be a curriculum you know and use, you can join our Facebook group for that as well. So before, I know I'm looking at lots of these logins of people and what they teach and where they're at. And so I see that we have a lot of middle school teachers. We have some high school, even some college friends. So you're all welcome. And I think everyone has a piece of this that you can use back in your classroom, regardless of what grade you teach. So to start, though, I want to make sure that we have common understanding. When I say math talk, so as I talk about how we foster the math talk community, some people use it as a verb, right? They say, oh, so students, we're talking about math today, right? So we are doing something we do. Some people use it as an adjective. They say we are a part of a math talk community. So it kind of describes who we are. And then finally, some people use it as a noun and they say things like, we did a math talk today. So I know that oftentimes when we use it as a noun, what we really mean is that we did a number talk, right? So that's a specific protocol that Sherry Parrish writes about in several different books. And so although we could use that term, I did a math talk, I want us to use it more today in that common understanding of a verb and an adjective. It's who we are. It's what we do throughout the entire math block. So I want you to be thinking about that as we go through tonight's presentation, that I am not talking about a moment in time. I'm not talking about the first 5 minutes of class. I'm not talking about one problem from your teacher's edition. I'm talking about the duration of your math block. And that's what I mean by math talk. So raise your hand, or even at this point, right, you're going to type your message in the chat box. If this is you, because this is why you would want to stick around, if this characterizes who you are. You believe math talk's important. You want students to talk more. You want all students to participate. You want all students to feel valued and heard. And you want student talk to be focused on topic and actually increase student understanding. So if that's you, put which one of those things made you show up here tonight? You're like, I really believe that math talk is important. I want more of it. Or I'm having a trouble with all kids participating. Or I don't think that kids want to participate because they don't feel like they're heard in my classroom. Everyone says all of the, lots of all of the aboves, all absolutely. Maybe you say, I have kids that are talking in the classroom, but truth be told, they love to talk. They just don't like to be on topic or to be focused, right? So if any of these things characterizes why you're here tonight, you're in the right place. Another thing to think about here is this training is a great fit for you. Okay. So the next question is people continuing to update that chat box here. A great fit if you have these types of experiences. So how many of you have the one and done, right? One student answers, the question seems to be done because you got the answer you were looking for, so you just move on. We call this ping pong math talk, right? Teacher asks question, student responds, and we got the answer, so now what do? We just move on. Right? Maybe you have the experience where you have students who just sit back and wait for others to answer or to think for them. So you're asking good questions, but you're really not getting all students' voices in the classroom because you tend to have those kids that like other people to do some of the thinking for them. Maybe you have the dominators. Right? So you try to turn and talk, you try to have kids engage in these conversations, but you have the same kids over and over again who dominate the conversation. And this might even be not just in the turn and talk, but they dominate in a hand raising. You ask a question and they blurt it before anyone else has a chance to say anything. Or you ask a question, you ask specifically for hands, and you get the same hands over and over again. So this would also be a great fit for you if any of those fit you or fit the types of experiences you have in your classroom. So if you were to choose one of these that you could try to solve today, which one would you really want an answer to? Put that in the chat box as we kind of gauge some of our ideas here. I want all students to feel valued. The blurter. Yeah, I love the blurters too, but they do tend to dominate, don't they? Yeah, lots of us. The dominators, one and done. We're kind of across the board here. The same kids over and over and over dying to answer, right? So those are good ones. Just students that sit and wait. So let's get right to some strategies, right? So I don't want to waste anyone's time here. It looks like this is a good fit for you. So if you're here, stay along. I'm going to give you some really simple strategies that as I train teachers just across the nation, people will go back to their classroom the very next day. And these are things you can put into place. And I hear positive feedback all the time. So let's get started. We know all of these things and all of these reasons will increase math talk or are reasons to have math talk, right? We know that we want them to increase student understanding. We want it to increase social and emotional things. Kids just need to know how to have conversations. We know we have English language learners that need to learn the language. So there's lots of reasons to have math talk. And I've kind of put them all under this umbrella. So there's reasons and there's goals for math talk. Maybe even want to boost memory or retain learning. And no matter what math talk book you read, there are so many on the market. I dare to say hundreds of them on the market. And as you read many of them, you can kind of synthesize and pull them all together. And they say very, very similar things. So I take all of those reasons and all of those goals to have math talk, and I put them all under this umbrella, because really, I feel like all of them are saying the same thing. If we have a strong community, if we have a lot of quantity, if we have a lot of opportunities for kids to talk, and then if we focus on the quality and we make sure that it is good conversation, then we're meeting our goals and our reasons for math talk. But what I find is that teachers really rely on the last. They start with the last. They start with quality. So they want what kids are saying to be perfect. They want it to sound great. They want it to sound reasonable. They want them to use defenses, which we all want those things. But the problem is when we don't get the results we want from all students, we actually start going to the left. Now we decrease the quantity. We don't give kids as many opportunities because it's just not working out like we hoped it would. It doesn't sound like it should. Kids aren't ready for it yet, right? I hear that from kindergarten teachers and I hear that from pre-algebra teachers. I hear it across the board that my student, not this group of kids or this group isn't strong. They're not getting it. And so then we decrease the quantity. We stop even giving them opportunities. When in all reality, we should have been working on the far left, which is the community. So when we foster an environment and a community that allows for really strong math thinking, we will in general start increasing our quantity because kids feel safe, accepted, valued, et cetera, in our class. And then long term, we will get better quality from them. So my challenge to you today is to start focusing on that left piece first, some of our community pieces. And so I'm going to give you some ideas about how you might do that now. The first one, as we go into community, is students have to see themselves as mathematicians, right? So in writing, we say, okay, writers. And in reading, we say, oh, readers today, good readers do blank, blank, blank. Scientists, today you're going to explore. But for some reason, many of us don't call our kids mathematicians when we get to math class. So I'm going to challenge us to first call them mathematicians. But I also need them to see themselves as mathematicians, not for their knowledge, not for the right answers they get, not for their ideas and how many ways they can solve a problem. I want them to see themselves as mathematicians for characteristics or a quality of a mathematician. Because oftentimes we have to diagnose that root cause, right? Like I only get some kids participating in math talk. I only get some kids raising their hand. And I'd like to suggest it's because if they're like us, I grew up anyway in a math classroom that was really about two things. It was about the right answer and it was about the teacher's way, right? So if it was about the right answer and the teacher's way, if I didn't know for sure that I could get the right answer, and if I didn't know for sure I could do it the teacher's way, then I wasn't doing any of the out of the box thinking. I wasn't taking any risks. I wasn't volunteering information. And I definitely did not want to talk about what I knew because in my mind, I didn't know anything unless I knew what the teacher was asking of me specifically. And I could say it the way she wanted me to say it. So because of that, I didn't really see myself as a mathematician because I couldn't do the problems, couldn't get them right. I couldn't do them quickly and I couldn't do them her way. So instead, I want to start to build up a mathematician by their qualities, because the more they see themselves as a mathematician, the more they're going to try, the more they're going to offer. But a lot of us don't offer anything, or we won't discuss anything in math class because we don't think that it's perfect yet. And so I'm not going to say it if I don't believe it. So I'm going to ask you to start an anchor chart, right? And at the top of the anchor chart, it would just say, what do mathematicians do? Or who are mathematicians? Or mathematicians, dot, dot, dot. And it's not a poster I want you to put up and make it really pretty and put, you know, like Chevron print all over on the backside and laminate it and hang it up in your room and have this beautiful piece of art. Okay, because then it really is just a decoration. I want you to build an anchor chart with students at the beginning of the school year or right now as you're heading back to school and you're reestablishing some norms. And as you see qualities of mathematicians, you're going to add it to this chart. So for example, I might throw out a problem to my students the first day back or next week on Monday, whenever, tomorrow. And I know for a fact that it's going to be a challenge for them. I know that we haven't taught this content yet. It's something they don't know. And so I just throw it out them and I say, friends, here's today's problem. Would you show me how you think you might solve it? Right? The moment I start seeing kids like, what do you mean? Well, we haven't learned this yet. In fact, I had in a recent demonstration lesson, I actually had a student say, ma'am, I know you're new to our class today and you're just a guest teacher, but we haven't learned this yet. And I said, I know. I just want to see what you know as a mathematician. What do you think you might do? And kids were just paralyzed. Like, but you haven't shown us yet. And the moment I had one student just start to write down an idea, he started to draw, I said, and that's what mathematicians do. Mathematicians try. Mathematicians draw pictures. I'm not looking for perfect. I'm not even looking for the right answer. I'm just looking for effort. So I want you to put in the chat box right now, what are qualities of a mathematician? And I want you to start with the things that bug you the most about your kids. You're like, if you would just dot, 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 dot. Okay, so if my kids they won't defend their thinking. Well, put that on your chart. My students get off topic. Well, put that on your chart. Mathematicians stay on topic. What would you get started? Yeah, mathematicians wonder. Mathematicians try. Persevere. They look great lists. They listen to each other. Someone, they play. They ask why. They muddle. I love that word. They muddle. Yeah, it's not clean. It's make mistakes. Perfect. They look for patterns. Okay, so how does this problem I just exposed to you, how does that deal with anything else we've done before? They make meaning of structure and reasoning, right? So think about the things that you really wish your kids would do or they believed about mathematicians, and you can tell they don't believe it because they don't do it. And if they really believe that's what a mathematician was, that they're more than just their right answer, they would do it, right? So think about those, and then I want you to make a list and just keep it in your planner. And every week, I want you to make a purposeful point about calling out that characteristic. And as soon as you can kind of force that to happen, like someone makes a mistake and you're able to all talk about it, you're like, that's what a mathematician does. Kids have to see us honoring things in the classroom that show them we really do value those things. But if the only thing we value are right answers, the right way, the teacher's way, that because that's all we talk about, then they start to create their own definition of what a mathematician is. So here's another list. You may have seen a list similar to this and you know many other different publications. This is my list, so a whole bunch of other things. And I start to add this to our list. And every time we get to a problem where I'm just not getting some of the behaviors that I want from kids, because remember, our ultimate goal is that they feel that they're a mathematician, so they'll do more conversing, they'll talk more. I'll say, remember, that's what a mathematician does. They find connections. Even if the connection was a wrong connection, it doesn't make sense connection. You got to start trying before you start getting things right. Right. So this is the list of mathematician qualities. So I encourage you to start here. What is a mathematician? What do they say? What do they do? And then you'll build this list throughout the entire year. And then students will begin to own this particular list or these qualities. The next thing as we move on, so that's your first idea is, you know, do you have a community where they know what a mathematician really is and what they are, who they are, and what they do? The next one is equitable participation. So if we want to foster an equitable math talk community, kids have to have a fair chance to talk. And so in Susan Chapin O'Connor and Anderson's book, Talk Moves, they talk about this definition. Equitable participation is defined as each person having a fair chance to ask questions, make statements, and express his or her ideas. So in our minds, we might think, well, of course my kids have equitable participation. They have equitable opportunities. But what I find is specifically when I ask kids to turn and talk. So now we have a community where kids know what I expect of them, that this is a community where kids talk, they share ideas. We've established some of those norms. Now I want kids to know and to feel like it is their right and their responsibility to talk every day, right? I want to hear every voice every day in that math classroom. But here's my problem. I'm not sure if you have the same one. When I say boys and girls turn and talk, I start to get in all those other problems. I get the dominators. I get the kids who kind of just bulldoze their partner. I have two kids that look at each other and they just both decide to exit out. I have a partnership where one kid gets pulled out for some reason and the other kid's now left alone. And so they just do nothing. They don't problem solve, join another group. They just sit there, right? So those aren't equitable participation moments. So I'm going to suggest this specific structure. So first of all, I want kids to be in a community where it is a hands down type of place, where no one raises their hand, everyone participates, we bounce ideas off of each other, and whether you're in a primary classroom all the way through your college level courses. However, what I've experienced is that oftentimes people need structures or scaffolds to lead them to those open math talk communities where we all want it to be open. We don't want to have specific structures, but when we don't have structures, we're making the assumption that students know how and when to talk to each other. And my experience is they don't, regardless of how old they are. So I'm going to present this particular structure. Now, I'm an elementary school teacher, and so I generally use this with elementary school teachers. However, I just was in some middle schools last week, and it worked beautifully well. So you decide for you how you might do this, but the idea would stay the same regardless of your grade level. So I ask kids, I start off just by saying, friends, I want you to tell me two famous video game characters that are in the same video game. And so now this can get kind of risky because the video game characters they come up with these days, I have no idea who they are, but I start kind of surf for ones that are familiar to me. And so I try to get someone to say Mario and Luigi because I can remember that. So I might use Mario and Luigi. If I'm using really primary students, I might say peanut butter jelly. You can change it. You know, different teachers use different combinations. And you may have heard this, like name your partners. But who wants to be partner A? There's not a whole lot of buy-in there, right? So maybe you use two political characters from a different part of your social studies unit, or and you bring that in here, or you use two opposites from your science unit. It doesn't matter, but give them two names. So then I partner them up and you decide how you're going to partner them. I think there's a lot of reasons to partner them differently throughout your lesson. I like to say, well, as you come to the carpet, if I'm moving them or you move to your table groups, I want you to be with Mario Luigi. As you go back to your table, I want you to be with your peanut butter jelly. So it might be helping partners. It might be similar performance levels in reading. It might be a boy-girl combination. It might be a behavior combination, right? However you're going to do it, you decide. And I'll say, okay, so you're Mario, you're Luigi. And then I role play with kids. And I'll say, so someone come up and help me. And, you know, I have an individual come up and they're Mario, let's just say. And now I'm going to teach them how to have a conversation. It takes 5 minutes. Right. So I said, so here's what I'm going to do. Mario's, I want you to turn to Luigi's and I want you to tell them in just a moment, what's your favorite thing to eat? Right. I keep it neutral. Something they can talk about. If I said, boys and girls, Mario's, turn to Luigi and tell them what you know about exponents. That is no longer an equitable conversation because only some people can participate because other people have no idea what an exponent is. And so they automatically feel cut off from that conversation. So I want them to practice conversations with something they're familiar with, something that's non-threatening. So I might say, what do you like to eat? And I'll say, Mario's, as you turn to Luigi, we're going to definitely think about that eye to eye, knee to knee, right? I want my knees to face you. I want my eyes to face you. If you're even thinking high school right now, you know what I'm talking about. Kids don't know how to have an eye to eye conversation, right? So they don't know how to make eye contact or that I should turn my body and have positive body language. So you think about how you want to structure it, but this is an important piece for people to really feel like they're being heard. So we'll model this. I have a friend at the front of the room. We turn to each other, we look, and that person says, my favorite food is, and let's say they say pizza. Then I say, Luigi's, you have two jobs. So in this particular example, Luigi's, you may either ask your partner a question about what they just said, or you can copy what they just said. Now, as you get in the upper grades, you change their list of things they can do. But in the beginning, make it very simple and very specific. And as they get good at those particular responses, you add more and they can start to choose from them. I don't give them a whole long list in the beginning because what I find is kids don't know when they're appropriate. They use them when they're inappropriate or when it doesn't fit the conversation. Okay, so now we role play and this little friend says to me, I like pizza. And I say to them, so do you like pepperoni on your pizza? And he says, yes. And I turn to the class and I say, well, friends, what I really like about what Mario just did is Mario did not just say pizza, because that would be a math blurt. And we don't blurt in math class, we use complete sentences. So when we have math talk, I want you to use complete sentence. My favorite food is pizza, right? So Luigi's, if you're thinking, I have no questions to ask my partner, right? So then that's okay. But then there's an active listening. You have to tell them what they said, because here's our problem. You have kids talking to each other, but who's listening, right? And how many of our classrooms are kids talking, but no one cares? So a partner might say, you say turn and talk, a partner turns to talk to their partner. And if you, I challenge you to do this, say, repeat what your partner just said. Guaranteed 90% of the class has no idea what the partner said, because they weren't listening. They think math talk is turn taking. It's his turn. It's her turn. When it's my turn, I'll talk. But otherwise, this is outside of me. It doesn't have anything to do with me. So we're training them that one person talks, the next person has to have a response as an active listener. And the first step is, can you just repeat the idea that you heard? This is fabulous for your ELs. They don't have, if they don't have the language, they're getting to hear the language, they're getting to rehearse the language. So in an equitable classroom, everyone gets an equitable chance to have a voice. It doesn't have to be their original idea, they're just using their voice and repeating an idea. I specifically have a way for them to stop. So I have them do like a frozen fist bump in the air. That shows me, I call it a learning bridge. You can use what you want. That just shows me that the kids are finished the conversation. So when Mario finishes and Luigi finishes, show me that learning bridge. You could say stand up. You could have them do something else. But I want to get a general gauge when most of the room has finished their conversation. It also gives them something to do when they're finished. If they don't have something to do when they both have taken a turn, that's when the conversations start going downhill. So they do their fist bump for me. I get a general feel. I pull the class back together. We move on to the next question, or I have kids respond out. This gives kids a fair chance to speak. So let me give you some reasons why it might work. I'm going to change slides here, but I do want you to see that the Kagan numbered head strategy is another way to do this if you would prefer pods or group work. So I'm not going to explain that strategy, but write that one down and look it up. Again, it's a Kagan strategy. It's called numbered heads. It's another way to make sure there's equitable voices, specifically in a group dynamic. But here's what happens when you name partners. Number one, it allows for self-advocacy. I say, boys and girls, turn and talk about, and I tell them to do a turn and talk. And I have Rose who just dominates. And you can study this, go into someone else's class or your own and just listen into conversation. You will hear the same person talk every single time. And the partner, let's say it's Rose and David doesn't say a single word. Even though David has something to say, Rose always starts the conversation and David just listens. Right? But David wants to say something, but all you said was turn and talk. And technically you guys followed, they followed the directions. Versus as soon as I implement this strategy, that kid will start advocating for himself. I hear it all the time. So I say, okay, Luigi's tell Mario's or Mario's tell Luigi's. So after I've trained them, now they just know that I'm going to go back and forth and I'll change it. Sometimes it's Luigi that talks first. Sometimes it's Mario. And then Luigi, I say, Luigi's tell Mario's, what do we know about squares? Or what do we know? And I'm sharing some ideas here. And now all of a sudden Rose goes to talk and David says, wait, she said, Luigi, it's my turn. He's advocating for himself now. Or he goes to Rose goes to talk and David says, no, remember it's you were supposed to start, or I'm talking, but no, it's yours. I'll even hear kids advocate for each other. Wait a minute. It's not my turn. It's your turn. So now I get self-advocacy. It holds students accountable. It increases engagement. I see my engagement go through the roof because kids don't know when I'm going to say their name. So it's not like the popsicle stick where it's like 1 in 30 chance. Right? This is every single few minutes I say, Luigi's, what did I just say? Mario's, so explain to your neighbor how I just told you to find the area of that rectangle. Luigi's, right? And I get with such a pace that kids have to hold on, because when I say Luigi's turn and tell Mario's, they don't have a choice. Luigi's have to talk, right? So now I give them coping mechanisms, like what if you don't know? How could you ask for help? But in general, kids start picking up my pace and the engagement is way higher. The last but not least is, before I have you chime in here, is it provides a structure for orienting to each other's thinking. Otherwise, kids, again, are just taking turns. So I'm going to add on to that listener's role. Like in the beginning, it's, you know, can you repeat? Or maybe it is, can you ask a question? But then it's going to be agree, disagree, give a counterexample. We can make a whole list of the other things the listener would have to do. So let's pause with this idea right now of structured partners is going to create an equitable opportunity for all voices in the room. So what else? What else would this type of a structured partnership do in your classroom? How could you see it helping math discourse? So would you right now type any other benefits to a structure like this in the chat box? And if you don't have any new ideas, then which of these ideas are you like, that reason alone is a reason to name my partners? What are you thinking? So we'll give everyone a chance to type in the top box, the chat box here. What else are you thinking? Have you done partner talk? Yeah, students can't opt out. I say this a lot. So this isn't a choice. When I say Mario's turn to Luigi, you have to. Ownership. Yeah, I see major buy-in when the kids get to choose the names. You could change the names every day if you wanted to. Everyone participate, pay every voice every day. Chips and salsa, I love it. Yep. Yeah, the pace definitely keeps off-topic conversations out of the picture. Yeah, great one, Whitney. Holds everyone accountable in a non-threatening way. No one's on the spot in front of the whole room. Absolutely. I think, Elzora, that's a really important one. Students get used to sharing their thoughts. Right? So they have to be comfortable hearing their own voice before I start calling on hands. I do a turn and talk every single time I want to hear something. I turn and talk first, and then I call on individual students. Okay, so there's so much safety. There's so much rehearsal of skills. There's so many listening skills here, right? So I get a really good feel. I also get to a formative assessment. I'm checking in and listening to specific conversations. So it's not a surprise who I call on for me. Sometimes when I cold call, I'm not sure what that kid's going to say. And I'm trying to get the conversation to go in a different way. Right? So that's a great one. That is, if I listen in, I'm checking in for formative. I'm like, okay, that idea has to be shared. And this idea has to be shared. And I'm getting a real sense of the types of ideas that are out there. So great ideas, friends. We're going to keep this moving. Thanks for participating in this. Oh, a great question here. How often do you change partners? I change them when they stop working. Right. So when I move kids a lot in the classroom. So during a math lesson, I just did this with eighth graders and they were like, what? And I had them come to the carpet in front of the whiteboard. And I said, when you sit on the carpet and let's say salt and pepper. I'm not sure what our names were. They came up with them. And when I said, now go as you think about an idea, because when they come to the carpet, I have a captive audience, no materials, no books, no pencils. We're just discussing the idea that's on the board. And I'll say, now go back to your tables and your work and see if you want to change your ideas at all. Work some more. As you go back to your tables, you should be sitting with your Mario Luigi partner, because we all get tired of hearing the same person all day. Have you ever had that in professional development? You sit with the same group of adults all day and you're like, okay, I'm kind of tired of talking to these people. Like, you like them and all, but you know how they feel. You're ready for a variety of voice. So I do make sure during the class there's at least two sets of partners they can be with. And then I think they should